Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Our neighbor, John Sanders, has been a leading light in our town since his arrival more than 70 years ago, where he came to school and became the student body president in 1950, and then he became a staff member at the Institute of Government beginning in 1951, ultimately serving as director for many years. More than that, he's been the go-to man. Whenever there was a problem or an opportunity in state government, he was also a mentor to many young Carolina students whom he encouraged to participate in public life. And I got a couple of them here to share their memories. Patrick Wooten, who is a special deputy attorney general. Or Wayne Godwin, who is been very active in public life in many cases and still is, most recently, is the head of the Democratic Party in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And a young lady, Karen Popp, who recently gave, as the president of the Law School Alumni Association, recently gave our friend John Sanders an award. And Karen, tell us a little bit about your connection with John and the award that the law school gave him.
Well, DG, thank you for having me here. We're very excited to be here to talk about such an unbelievable North Carolinian, John Sanders. And yes, as the president of the Law Alumni Association, I had the honor of presenting to John last year the Lifetime Achievement Award. That's the highest award that the law school gives. We don't give it out every year, and it really is an award to acknowledge an alum, and John is an alum of our great law school, a 1954 graduate. He has had a lifetime career that is unbelievably distinguishable, which is what that award was all about. So it was a real honor to present it to him.
Well, from a law school standpoint, what were some of the keys when you had to read him a citation, I bet?
I sure did, and it was quite impressive. One of our alums, Scott Peeler, who is a partner in New York at Arent Fox, nominated him, and I had the privilege of chairing the committee at the time. And Scott and I know each other from other circles because I'm a partner in Washington, D.C. at Sidley Austin. I started my career in New York at Sullivan and Cromwell. The nomination that Scott put forward and then all the additional information that is out there, anyone can read these wonderful accomplishments that John had. But one of the things you said, which is he's really spent a lifetime mentoring North Carolinians and mentoring young people and middle-aged people and older people. He's such a role model and would take the time to help others.
Did you, as people were making the case to honor John, did you have people tell you some interesting things about their experiences with him?
Well, I certainly heard a number of war stories. Tom Ross, for example,
this is Tom Ross, the former president of the university.
Former president of the university.
And a graduate of the law school.
And a graduate of the law school. Tom has publicly said that John's invaluable contributions to the UNC system have been tremendous. And when he said that when he was selected as president of UNC, no one did more to help prepare him for that role than John did. John had provided him with reams of reading material, both historical and current, enabled him to better understand the UNC system and the opportunities and challenges. And, we've had some wonderful presidents of this great UNC system. And, to me, that's exactly what John did, is he helped anybody and everyone at all levels.
Well, one of the things that came to my attention when I was working down in the president's office was that during one of the dark days, and there were many dark days in the UNC system, but that President Friday asked John Sanders to put aside his duties at the School of Government or Institute of Government and come become vice president of the UNC system, which he did, and served as long as President Friday needed him, and then went back to the School of Government, Institute of Government then.
Yep. Scott Peeler who nominated him tells this story that I think really is indicative of John. And Scott at the time was a student here on campus at Chapel Hill and was doing a number of things. And he said that he was in Hamilton Hall coming down the elevator with another gentleman who said he was wearing a dark suit and a red tie. And as they were, as the door was getting ready to open, John said to him, "You're Scott Peeler, aren't you?" And this is a student, right? And Scott said, "Well, yes, I am." And he said, "Well, I'm John Sanders, and I'd like to take you to lunch." And from then on, John Sanders was as Scott says, a second father to him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly I think there's a lot of stories like that, including the gentlemen that are here with us today, DG.
What do you think John Sanders saw in Scott Peeler? And did he just see him like his looks or hear him talk?
Scott at the time was doing student leadership work on campus that John obviously had heard about and possibly wanted to mentor him and happened to be in an elevator with him one day and said, "Let's have lunch."
Well, what reaction did you get from your law school fellow alumni people about this award?
You know, I think the law school is very proud to have John's name on this award. And we've got, as you know, just unbelievable alums of our great law school. But I think that the folks that I spoke with, it was a consensus that he certainly does demonstrate all the qualities that award would have, which, you know, not only is he, you know, distinguished, but he has made contributions, achieved in a widely recognized way, in a very significant and outstanding way in his field.
Well, this is quite interesting to me as sort of an observer, but we have two guys who were also mentees. Is that what you call them?
Yep, mentees.
And Wayne, tell us. Did he just catch you in an elevator and say, "I would like to have lunch with you"? How did you develop an association with John Sanders? And this is Wayne Godwin.
Well, and I'm thankful very much for DG for your inviting us to be here today. And I first met John Sanders in 1985, and it was during a dinner for incoming Morehead scholars. And you know, I came from Hamlet, small town. You know, this was
a very important town.
A very important town, but this was heady stuff. You know, coming into UNC Chapel Hill and being in the Morehead program, and sort of like we heard about Scott Peeler, this gentleman in a dark suit and red tie, crisp white shirt. He said, "You're Wayne Goodwin, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes." And then he started asking me about, and I guess he may have read up on the students who were the nominees for the Morehead. And next thing I know, he said, "I'd like to take you to lunch." And then we began, you know, like as he did with other students, he would provide tours of the campus and give us a history of each
as
of the buildings.
As a group or just as individuals?
Individuals mostly. But he would talk about the buildings and the history of the campus, and it's just fascinating. And next thing I knew, after I was, you know, it was an undergraduate, he became a friend, a mentor, and as we heard a while ago, he became a father figure because he really cared about all the students.
Just to be specific, I mean, I'm fascinated by the tour of the campus, and can you take us back about walking the campus and some of the things that he told you along the way, or is all that receded in the distant past?
Well, like my hairline, a lot of it has receded. But what I do recall is that, you know, he took the time to share the history of the buildings and the history of the persons for whom the buildings were named. And we talked about this is to honor Thomas Wolfe, and this building is why it's Old East and New East, and then he just, you know, it's, every time we were on campus, he had something to add about the history, and it was fascinating about it. And next thing I knew, very quickly after you know we met, he asked the student body president at the time to appoint me to the building and grounds committee. So
he asked the student body president with whom he had a similar relationship,
yes.
Probably.
Yes,
he's saying Wayne's a comer. put him on this committee to bring him along. I mean, is this he's manipulating you guys in a very positive way?
It was all for good. It was for the good of the cause, and we had many similar interests, and I think that also factored in. We loved books. Of course, that's one of the things he has told many of us. I have a book for you, and I have almost a whole library just of books that John and Ann Sanders both have got. It's same with Patrick and others. But
tell you what,
yeah, it's fascinating.
Let's take a quick break and come right back to this. If you joined us late, we're talking about our friend and neighbor John Sanders, and we know that he's been a leading light in this town, but he's also been a leading light to a bunch of young people, and we're going to talk more with some of them after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about Chapel Hill's John Sanders. Many of you may remember him as the guy who ran the School of Government, the Institute of Government, as they call it now. And if you didn't, when you passed by the School of Government's building, you'll find John Sanders' name attached to it. So why is he so revered and so famous? And we've got a group of his young friends to tell us, including Wayne Goodwin, who got to know John Sanders when he was a Morehead Scholar, and
yes,
John Sanders identified him as a potential leader. He proved pretty good judgment, didn't he?
He's done that with everybody, I think. I mean, everyone that he has gotten to become a mentor for over the years. I mean, became a leader in public service, a leader in academia, a leader in whatever profession that those students chose. I mean, he had a knack for choosing folks, not all of whom were necessarily, you know, extroverts. He was able to connect with introverts and extroverts, and I had no idea until, you know, it took a good year or two, but very, very quickly into my tenure as an undergraduate student, I realized that he was the closest, and I'll explain why, closest that I would get to someone like Thomas Jefferson. And let me explain that. John F. Kennedy had said, you know, one time that all the Nobel laureates gathered together, he said this is the most extraordinary collection of talent and of human knowledge that's ever been gathered at the White House, with the possible exception of Thomas Jefferson when he dined alone. And John mastered and cultivated an interest in so many things. It was almost Jeffersonian. I mean, architecture, art, books, groundskeeping, history, politics, oratory, music, historic preservation, writing, and the law. I'm just still fascinated about how much of a Renaissance man John Sanders is, and the impact he had not only on all the students, but on me as a young student, and now as a longtime friend.
So he brought you into all of those worlds?
For the most part. I mean, you know, some of our friends were more on the architectural side, and some friends on the music side, but there were times we would gather at his house and have a hymn singing, or we would listen to classical music. He also encouraged us to, you know, never miss a political funeral. You know, just because, you know, you get to meet a lot of people, learn about the history of that particular public servant. I mean, there's, you know, he included as many of us as he could.
What? How large was the group that you're talking about at any one time on the campus? Was it four or five of you, or 15, or 100?
It was a large. I mean, you know, there were cliques of us who, you know, through the dialectic and philanthropic societies, mm-hmm, that you know, through that group. But I would, you know, there at one given time it might be an individual. It might be three or four of us that would, I know Patrick and I and Ted Teague and a few others would go and meet up with it and go to various events with him. But it could be a one-on-one, or it could be a larger group. There were times when a larger group of us would go out to dinner, and it was fun.
What was he thinking? Was he thinking that I'm helping to prepare a cadre of people who can serve the state, or was he just like being stimulated himself by being around young people and watching and working with them as they learned and grew?
Well, my best guess is that he believes that the role of the university is to prepare current and the next generation for leadership. and in whatever field it may be, whether it's, it doesn't have to be in government, it can be in any other endeavor, and that he sees himself, and certainly back then saw himself as someone to help foster in these young college students to be all they can be, learn all they can, and develop friendships that'll last a lifetime. And all the way he was promoting public education, the unique role that the university has with preparing students to and graduates to go wherever their heart desired after that. But I don't know. I mean, there's so many. He has so many different facets of his life that, you know, he can talk with you about art. He can talk with you about architecture. He can talk with you about, you know, the history of the state. He wrote the state constitution that we have in place now.
We're going to talk about that. I tell you what. Let's move over. We've been listening to Wayne Goodwin talk a little bit about his experience being mentored by John Sanders. And Patrick, wouldn't you have similar connections and a little bit different? Tell us about how you first met John Sanders.
I first met John through the Dialectic and Philanthropic Society meetings.
I should
meetings.
Say that you're a special deputy attorney general, and you're working for the public.
I like do public
Wayne,
work.
Just as John Sanders hoped that you would.
Well, it was, I don't know if it was expected, but it certainly arrived, and it happened for many of us that knew John and were on the campus and got familiar with state government through him, even though we may have had some familiarity with it. Some ways we got to learn more about it through John. Mm-hmm. But I was at a DIFI meeting one Monday night, which the Joint Senate meets on Monday nights when the classes are in session. And there's this man who shows up with a, you know, suit and tie.
This is your freshman year?
This is my freshman year. Mm-hmm. And so this man shows up and he walks in and sits down the back of the room at the chamber in New East or New West. And finally I said, "Who is that man?" You know, and they said, "Well, that's John Sanders." And I said, "What's he doing here?" And well, he's the advisor for DIFI. And so John, out of this busy schedule that he kept, every Monday night he would drop in on the DIFI meetings, mm-hmm. where we were debating something or talking about something. And so he met a whole cadre of students there, and he would get to know most of them. Then he's on the DIFI Foundation and knew people through that way, but eventually you would get this kind of, "Would you like to have lunch?" And lunch with John was always very interesting because John Sanders only eats food for sustenance. He is not,
what do you mean?
He is not in favor of sitting there and spending a whole lot of time dining on fine cuisine. John really is, he has a sweet tooth, but he's never been a gourmand.
What is it, meat and three?
No. John, you know, he's reached this nice age, and we should learn something from it. At the Carolina Inn, you went through the cafeteria line, and John got a plate of fresh fruit with cottage cheese in the mm-hmm. middle. That's every right. single time. Put a little dressing and a little salad.
And
something
was he
like
encouraged
that.
You to eat that way?
No. He didn't, of course, but that's what he had. But he would, if you were lingering over your food and really enjoying it, he wanted to talk about something, he'd say, "Are you done?" and we were at a dinner one night in Raleigh, and some years ago, a few years ago, and John was kind of picking at his food, and I said, "You're not hungry?" He said, I've grown to have an antipathy against chicken. You know, he just really didn't care for chicken at all because he got served so many during all those banquets he went to. But not a gourmand, but certainly a lover of life and lover of other fine things. And what Wayne was saying is that John had so many friends, and we were so different. We didn't all know one another. You know, he had friends who were artists.
And, well, let me ask you this, Patrick Wooten. He takes you to lunch, yeah. and Wayne had also mentioned being asked to lunch. Did he pay for your lunch when he invited you to lunch?
The direct quote was always, "Your money's no good here."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. you and it's kind of fun now to take John to lunch and pay for his lunch without protesting. But he was always like that. And he might bring a book, and he would find out what you were interested in. Mm-hmm. And the key thing about John, I think, that you didn't realize until later when you got to know him, is John didn't spend any time telling you were wrong.
What do you mean?
He didn't tell you your view of the world was wrong. He didn't tell you you should be a X or you should be a Y or you should be doing this or you should be doing that. That was not John. And if you look at the group of friends we've got and our various political beliefs, our various religious beliefs, our various locations where we live, what we do. It's very diverse. Artists, architects, priests, doctors, lawyers, bums. You know, some of us didn't turn out so well. You know,
well, Patrick, you know who it is,
but all of us. But John was. I just want you to be a good citizen in many ways.
Well, did he lead the conversation? Did he have an agenda of things that he wanted to get across to you? That he was. Or did he just come and say, "What are you doing now? What was it?"
It was fairly Socratic. You know, he would.
What do you mean?
John would pick a topic and would go into it and say, "Well, what do you think?" And you would go on, and then he would ask you a probing question about that, and then he would ask you another one, and then when you trapped yourself in a corner, he'd go, you know.
I know this is not fair at all, but can you go back and come close to remembering one of the topics that you all talked and how he kept that topic open and listened to your thoughts and then said,
well, you know, one of the things, and I pulled out, and I think this is illustrative of John's logic and the way he wrote and his publications and the way he approached a lot of things. There's this very scholarly part of John, but there's this extremely logical part of John. And he was writing about, he was on this commission to study how state government looked in Raleigh. They were trying to figure out where to put all the buildings and what to keep and what to reorganize and where to put the green spaces and are we going to keep this building over here and that. And, you know, John sort of brought the Capitol back. He was the spearhead he and Dr. Jones, H.G. Jones, the late Dr. Jones, were really instrumental in getting the Capitol restored.
And what do you mean restored?
After the legislature moved out in 63, it just really wasn't in great shape. The roof was bad, you know, in general. And there were other things that had been neglected, had been abused, not intentionally, but just by use. And John got a crowd of folks together and formed a foundation for the Capitol and became its president and said, let's raise some money and let's make North Carolina proud of its Capitol again. You know, we've only got one. We've got a legislative building, but we only have one Capitol. People say it's the old Capitol. Well, we ain't got a new one. It's the only one. And John is the one who helped bring all that back and get it going. He has a lot of material he's written on it. But one of the things he wrote says about the people who wanted the building there, and he said, it's clear that the commissioners were motivated by a desire to erect a Capitol, which would be an object of just pride of every liberal mind in the state and the admiration of every enlightened stranger. And then in the next part of it, John goes on to explain, and by the way, if you spent that much money on a building in Raleigh, it settled the question of where the Capitol was going to be permanently because they couldn't afford to build a new one somewhere else. So that was kind of the way John would think about things, is he would point out the obvious logic of behind what you're reading in the paper and why someone did something, or the practical use of having a board that did this or a board that did that. And John really believed in government. And he also believed in people who became practitioners of government. It wasn't up to John who was in charge. He just thought that everyone, he wasn't head of the Institute of Government, which came about, as we know, because of the debacle from the Depression when we had no money and nobody knew how to finance things and it wasn't organized and the governor and everyone decided, you know, we really need to train local officials in how to run local government and we need to train state officials in how to be part of state government. And John felt very, very firmly about it. He said one time, I have no interest in doing this in Florida or Texas or anywhere else. I want to do it here. He deeply committed to North Carolina and still is. Very extremely nonpartisan, and that earned him the respect of many members of the legislature, which is why he served on so many commissions.
Well, if you joined us late, we're talking about our neighbor, John Sanders. I'm visiting with two of his, we call them mentees, Wayne Goodwin. you've just been listening to Patrick Wooten. We're going to hear some more from Karen Pop, who's the head of the Law School Alumni Association, which recently gave John an award, and hope you'll stick with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. If you join us late, we're talking about our neighbor in Chapel Hill, one of the really leading lights of our town, John Sanders. And not just in our town, but in the School of Government, the old Institute of Government that he headed for many years, and as a counselor to state leaders for many years. We're here sort of celebrating John Sanders and doing it in the company of two young men. Once young men that he mentored.
Thank you.
And Wayne Goodwin and Patrick Wooten and Karen Pop, who is the head of the Law School Alumni Association, which recently gave an award. And Karen, I hadn't asked you about how you were mentored because it was a different world, sort of, back then.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I've been blessed with some great mentors in my life. In fact, Ferebee Taylor, mm-hmm. former chancellor, was one of my mentors when I was in law school here, and remained so really until he passed.
Wow.
So, the great thing about this state is it has really generated some phenomenal people. That love the state and love the future generations of our state. And that's really sounds like from the stories we've heard today that John Sanders really that was important to him, is to make sure mm-hmm. to pay forward and that we did have future leaders. You know, one of the things that I had heard about him over time was his commitment to diversity, his commitment to promoting women, and to bring in, you know, an all-star group of people as faculty at the Institute of Government, and to make that institute accessible to people across the state. He was seemed to have been a very fair leader in that regard. And one of my mentors, Walter Dellinger, whom I worked for in Washington when he was in the Office of Legal Counsel, his wife Ann Dellinger were one of the women
that John Sanders brought into the school.
That John recruited in. Right. And Ann could have gone anywhere. I mean, Ann was a graduate.
She was a star.
She was. She graduated top in her class at Duke and could have gone anywhere. And John convinced her to go to the Institute. The rest
is
history. Now, was
she one of the first women in the high leadership?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know if she was one of the first. I would think that she may have been. But, it's certainly.
But in those days, I mean, it was tough for for women in those fields, to break in, not working for him,
right? Well, it was yes. I mean, it certainly was. I was the first student body president in the UNC system. I was elected student body president at UNC Charlotte in 1979.
Wow!
And another great leader in this state, Bill Friday, took me under his wing mm-hmm. As president of the UNC
system. Mr. Friday knew that. And he wanted that to work out, I guess.
Well, and, the student body presidents would come to Chapel Hill on occasion to meet there in the what's now known as the Spangler Building. Yes, it was, great, great education that this UNC system gives, and because of people like John Sanders.
You've heard these boys, these middle-aged men, talk about their...
He's going to have us retired by the time we get done.
...experience with John. And did you learn anything from them, or you want to pursue any of that?
You know, I'm sure. I mean, some of these war stories, I'm not surprised at the types of things that I've heard about Mr. Sanders over the years. And it also... I'm sure with many of the listeners brought back memories about being a freshman on a campus and meeting people that really had an impact on you in your career. John Sanders, these stories that we've heard today are stories that I've heard from others.
We don't want to pop any bubble or anything, but you're a woman and all we've heard about is John's mentoring young men.
Well, but I think that Ann Dellinger and company is an example of how he sought to diversify.
Of course, but in terms of this special identifying young man as a freshman early on and helping prepare them in a very special way, right, as I've learned today, for leadership. that it at that time, and that there weren't any or not many young women who got tapped by John.
Well, and I don't know that to be the case.
It did change. I mean, Rashmi Aaron and others in my era, that, you know, John's from he's now almost 93. He's from an era where, you know, men did not take young women out to eat lunch and by themselves very much. You know, that was just a rules of the road. And by the time I came along in the 89, 90 and all that, you know, people understood that was not what was happening. And so Rashmi and a bunch of others like that certainly started to fall in that category of being mentors.
Female, yes, mentees.
Who were involved in student government. I mean, because John was sort of interested in who was in student government in some ways. And so the more involvement in women in student government, the more John got in contact with them. And particularly through the student associations through other universities. Mm-hmm. John got involved in those later on after he retired from the directorship of the Institute. Mm-hmm. And that was 28 years ago now?
Yes, it was.
So,
And I think...
I apologize. I've got... we're just getting going. I need to take a break. If you're a listener and joined us late, we're talking about John Sanders and the contributions that he's made for all of us, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about our neighbor, John Sanders. I'm talking about with three people who have close connections with him. Patrick Wooten, special deputy attorney general. Wayne Godwin, chair of the Democratic Party. And Karen Popp, who is president of the Law School Alumni Association, recently presented John with an important award. And we've been arguing with each other in the break about whether or not we treated John fairly about this question of, did he just mentor boys coming along? Karen, what are you going to say about that?
Well, what I was going to say before we took a break is that, given that I was the first woman to be elected student body president of the UNC system in 1979, certainly a lot changed in that period and thereafter for women in leadership positions on campuses across the UNC system. And I'd understood that John did start mentoring students, women students, as times changed in that way. And certainly he had already been very out front in bringing women into the faculty at the Institute, promoting women, Ann Dellinger being one as an example. But I open it up to Patrick and Wayne, who sort of have lived that period as well.
Well, I think we got consensus. You all have already told us that John was mentoring young women from at least the late 80s and early 90s.
That's right.
In a similar way, although the classic image is that he identifies a prominent young student who earlier at times was mostly male and at later on, we're both male and female. Is that?
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. Yeah.
And you've got to realize John had to go home to a woman too, and that's Ann Sanders. And I think anybody, it rolls off your tongue, John and Ann.
Right, they're a package.
Absolutely a package. Bill and I, it's John and Ann.
They brought Eleanor Roosevelt here together.
That's right. And Ann has been. She's had such an inside look at John and what he's been doing over the years. And before they got married and when he was a student at Chapel Hill. And, you know, one of the things that's kind of odd about today is that we think of John as a very straight-laced kind of guy. And someone asked him over at his retirement community, said, Sanders, why do you always wear a tie? And he said, I'm a bureaucrat. This is my traditional costume. and John was... But as a student, you know, John and various other ones who that post-war era were very concerned about integration and treatment of folks in the world and how we live post-war. And they took a lot of flack for that. They wanted, there was a speaker who wanted to come to Memorial Hall, and John says, and other students said, we just don't think there ought to
this
be.
This is an African-American student or
no, this speaker? Was a Japanese Christian leader who was coming.
Oh, my golly.
And they wrote a letter and said, you know, no, we don't think that, including the YMCA at Chapel Hill, and we think everybody should just come and sit down and listen to this person. And then it went on to more and more. And finally, there was a trustee who went on a campaign writing letters to the students who were involved, insinuating they were under this Northern influence. And the reason that – and Ann told me the other day, the reason that John – she knew about this is – or John knew it was going on is because the mayor was good friends with John's father and brother and all this and showed him the letter. And it was similar to another letter of someone else who got – and back – you know, this is 1950. This would ruin
John
your career.
Was, John Sanders, we've been talking about him. He was student body president at Carolina.
And so, you know, if you're planning to go back home – and you've got someone running a smear campaign against you as some sort of, as I think the word they thought of described as heretics, you could not have a job. It was very real. And Ann said, you know, it was a really rough time. In classic John fashion, they wrote letters to the paper, and then they went in and they were called in the trustees meeting, and they were sure they were going to be handed their head on a platter. And John and his friends were persuasive enough that the Board of Trustees wound up censuring that trustee.
Oh, wow.
It's an incredible story. So John understood what it was like to be a rabble-rousing student. We don't think of him that way because, you know, he's –
Well, he couldn't have been a rabble-rousing student shouting and all that. He's doing it in a quiet, orderly way.
But he shocked the system.
Right.
You know, that's the point.
It was
point.
The ideas that he was willing to propound.
Yeah, he was willing to stand up. And he's always been a proponent of people.
But
that's why he doesn't say you're wrong. He wants you to do
your thing.
But he's
the proponent of realistic progress rather than shooting for the moon, right?
I don't know. At the time, it might have been looked like the moon, you know.
Yeah.
The law certainly wasn't in his favor. You know, it was a very moral judgment. So, I think he's owed his due, and I think Dick Murphy and all those other students about that time, and Henry Bowers, and there's a whole cadre of those folks who we've lost so many of.
Fantastic, in helping me understand and appreciate the contribution of my friend John Sanders. I'm so glad that you all were willing to do it, and we've got just a minute. If each of you would like to make sort of a final. Goodbye to the people who are listening.
Well,
this is Wayne Goodwin.
Yes. Well, John was always giving us books. So upon his retirement in 1992, we thought we would give him a book, but it wasn't any ordinary book. Patrick and I and another colleague of ours, we wrote to everybody that we thought would want to, you know, chip in an essay or a letter. And we had letters from Bill Friday, Charles Carralt, from, goodness, Terry Sanford, from folks in Dick Jenrette, from folks from New York, all across the country, as well as current students. And we had them bound in a leather-bound book and presented it. And the name of the book was North Carolina's Invisible Hand. And we recall meeting with you, DG, about that as we were preparing that book, and we presented it to him, and there are copies of that book in the Davis Library and at the School of Government. And it just the stories are there, and I encourage folks to go read those. And it's true. John Sanders was North Carolina's invisible hand, just like Adam Smith talked about. He moved this state forward and moved the careers and lives and futures of many young people in a direction they never would have thought, and it was all for the good.
Well, thank you so much, Wayne Goodwin. Patrick Wooten, how about you? Got a quick summary.
I echo everything that Wayne just said, and I think John is a person that we know as our friend and neighbor, as you've called him, is oftentimes an extremely funny guy. He's also one of the more interesting people. Only John is the kind of person that's so interested in things. One day he sent me over to Old East when they were renovating. He said, go over there. They've got a board I want you to get. And so I went and got a board. And I brought the board back. And I said, what are you going to do with this? Well, that board is now the staff that the faculty marshal carries.
My golly, that's such a great story.
You know, John always had these things. He said always, you know, the little silver symbolism. Piece on top. All mm-hmm. of it, John went through all the symbolism and all that. Only John would lead you on those little tricks. You know?
Patrick, that's right. Boone, thank you so much. Yeah. Karen, we saved the last 30 seconds for you.
Well, I can't tell you how proud we are at the law school and us alums of the law school to call John Sanders an alum of the University of North Carolina School of Law. And it was a real honor for our alums to present him with that award.
Thanks for that, and thanks for helping us understand him even better today. Thanks, Patrick Wooten. Thanks, Wayne Goodman.
Thank you, DG.
Thank you, DG.
Thanks to all y'all for listening. This is DG Martin who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.